What most people never saw was Begin the politician, the man who shrewdly weighed the pros and cons of issues, measured public opinion while seeking to mold it, judiciously leaked stories to the press when it could help his cause, knew the value of compromise, and appreciated the realities of power. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 266, The Path to Camp David. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. Following Sadat's visit to Jerusalem, the Carter administration continued to hope for a larger Middle East peace conference. But eventually, the American administration turns its attention to the Israel-Egypt relationship, specifically. From the beginning, however, the approach of the Carter administration to Begin was mistaken in its premises. As Gerald Steinberg and Ziv Rubinovitz note in their important book about Begin and the Camp David Accords, the Carter administration did not understand Begin's election as the mahapach that it truly was. It had been assumed that 1977 was an unrepresentative moment in Israeli politics, that leadership in Israel would return at some point to the status quo. In truth, of course, as we now know, Begin's election marked the beginnings of a real shift in the development of the Israeli body politic, one that would only further reflect itself over the years to come. Moreover, Begin was wrongly seen as an inflexible person, and it was thought that the proper path in diplomacy was to work around him somehow. This, of course, did not work. Steinberg and Rubinovitz quote the Carter administration National Security Council staffer William Quant, who reflected that, quote, "We never quite figured out how to get around Begin or work through him or work over his head or behind his back. I cannot stress to you how difficult that turned out to be," end quote. All this, of course, is a fundamental misunderstanding of Begin. And, as we'll describe soon, Quant came to truly appreciate Begin's political skill. Steinberg and Rubinovitz remind us that Begin, in planning for peace, was charting his own course carefully, one which the American administration failed to appreciate. They write, quote, "Given this image, it was even harder for the United States to contend with and incorporate the fact that Begin's harshest critics were from his own party and faction in Likud and Chirut. If Begin was seen as a fanatic and hardline Zionist extremist, the Carter administration could not understand that his willingness to make compromises, including the dismantling of settlements and withdrawal from the Sinai, and to accept even limited autonomy in Judea and Samaria, was fiercely rejected by critics who accused him of treachery or capitulation to American pressures. At the other end of the political spectrum, the Labor Party and the left attacked Begin for not moving quickly enough, not making generous concessions, or taking the security risks that they might have taken had they been in power. From the beginning, Begin was caught between these different pressures, and as a result, he sought to chart his political path very carefully." End quote. Thus, as discussions proceeded but also stalled, the path to Camp David, rightly understood, is to be seen through the lens of the path that Begin paved. Among the many issues under discussion between Israel and Egypt, two perhaps stood out as the subjects of greatest tension. The first was that of the political future of the Arabs in Judea and Samaria, with Sadat demanding full independent statehood and Carter asking for that as well. The second issue was the future of the Israeli presence in the Sinai, especially when it came to the settlements there. Begin insisted that he could not accept an Arab state in Judea and Samaria, and that such an independent state with military capacity would be a threat to Israel. Together with Moshe Dayan, Begin offered a vision of autonomy. Avi Shilon describes the proposal, quote, "As for the future of Judea and Samaria, Dayan proposed that Jordan and the Palestinians assume the civil administration of their inhabitants, while official sovereignty and military authority would remain in Israel's hands," end quote. This, however, proved unacceptable to Sadat, who believed that he could not move forward toward peace with Israel without an embrace by both sides of full statehood. Meanwhile, Menachem Begin began receiving harsh criticism from members of the right for his willingness to negotiate about this issue at all. Avi Shilon again, quote, "As disagreements mounted between Israel and Egypt during the talks, cracks began to appear in the national consensus within Israel as well. Those on the right were concerned about the autonomy plan and a full withdrawal, while those on the left were concerned that overly hardline positions would delay the signing of a treaty. Begin's main problem, however, was the criticism leveled against him within his own party. Moshe Arens, head of the Knesset's Foreign Affairs and Security Committee, opposed the talks on the grounds that without Sinai, Israel's strategic value to the United States would be greatly diminished. The young Geula Kohn, true to form, declared that giving up Sinai would be tantamount to treason. At a conference in the settlement of Ophron, Samaria, the settlers' leaders claimed that Begin had lost his way in his pursuit of a Nobel Peace Prize," End quote. So Shilon writes, and what this means is that Menachem Begin was truly charting his own course, one that was driven by a deep sense of the Jewish connection to Judea and Samaria, but also one that was willing to make serious sacrifices in the Sinai. It was, in other words, neither the approach desired by Carter nor by much of the Israeli right. In one of the most strikingly symbolic stories mentioned by Shilon, one that I believe I have mentioned before, Begin, in an argument with his fellow Jabotinskyite Shmuel Katz, explained his willingness to make sacrifices when it came to the Sinai, and said to Katz, "But Sinai is not part of the land of Israel, even according to the Bible." And Katz replied, "What does this have to do with the Bible? I mean, you can use it to prove almost any borders you want." Thus, Begin, working with Dayan, was presenting a plan of his own, one that was not embraced wholeheartedly by the Israeli right or left. And when he presented his plan for a vote of approval to the Knesset, it was supported only by part of his own party and passed only because of votes from the party of Peres and Rabin, known at that time as the Ma'arach. This indicates how the notion of Begin as a mere inflexible embodiment of his party is just factually incorrect. How he was charting his own course, one that reflected his fealty to faith and tradition, his deep connection to the land of Israel, while at the same time, one that reflected how he was actively seeking a way to thread the political and diplomatic needle. A step forward in the talks with Egypt became possible due to a suggestion made by Dayan, which was that an additional clause be added to the plan, one which would not commit Begin or Israel to something specific, but one which would also give Sadat what the Egyptian president could see as the political cover that he needed to move forward. The suggestion was made by Dayan in the international arena first and only then proposed to Begin, but it is one that Begin accepted. As Shilon describes it, quote, "Dayan knew that Begin would not accept any changes to his autonomy plan, so he suggested that Egypt accept it as it was. On this issue," he explained, "Begin would not budge an inch. To overcome the objections, he undertook to add to the autonomy plan a clause to the effect that 5 years after autonomy was established, Israel would agree to discuss the permanent status of the administered territories," end quote. And Shilon further notes that Dayan, in putting forward the proposal, told Begin that, quote, "When it comes down to it, when we discuss the permanent status of the territories, Israel will be entitled to stand her ground," end quote. It is with this proposal in the balance that Carter invited both Sadat and Begin to Camp David, and it is only by bearing in mind all that transpired before then that we can appreciate, as Steinberg and Rubinowitz argue, what a triumph Camp David would be for Begin, and how from the beginning Begin was engaging in true statesmanship. One that would recognize this from the Carter administration was William Quant, who after Begin left office in 1983, wrote an article titled "Menachem Begin, A Past Master and Negotiation." Quant reflected as follows, quote, "What most people never saw was Begin the politician, the man who shrewdly weighed the pros and cons of issues, measured public opinion while seeking to mold it, judiciously leaked stories to the press when it could help his cause, knew the value of compromise, and appreciated the realities of power. This was Begin the tactician, maneuvering, seeking to seize the initiative from others, possessing a fine sense of timing, and using to good effect his reputation for intransigence." Begin the politician, Quant continues, was a master tactician, made more formidable by his absolute certainty about the justice of the goals he was pursuing. These were not personal goals of wealth or prestige. Begin lived modestly, and while a very proud man, did not suffer from excessive egotism. End quote. And as Quant goes on to argue, Begin was driven, first and foremost, by his sense of Jewish history, both its connection to Eretz Yisrael, as well as the persecution that the Jewish people had experienced. All this would be reflected in what would unfold in Camp David, and in the statesmanship of Menachem Begin, which deserves to be truly understood and remembered in history. This is Meir Soloveitchik, signing off.